Hi, everybody. Welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Balogi. Thanks for being here with us this week. It is the week of November 13th, 2023, as I'm recording this. It's a Monday show. Hope you had a great weekend. Had some really cool experiences this past week. I'll tell you about them a little bit, and then we'll talk a little bit about the golf. I'm actually going to be making my first trip to Old Barnwell down in Aiken, South Carolina this upcoming weekend. I'm super excited about it. Just got off the phone with one of my buddies who's coming with me to check it out for the first time as an 18-hole course. Joined there and played the 7-hole loop that they had. They just opened the 18-hole loop about 2 months ago. A lot of people have been enjoying the property that are in the membership group. It's not a large membership, but I know a number of people also on golf Twitter or X that are in the architecture community or like to travel a lot to play golf have seen the place. So I'm very excited to see it and experience it. And we'll talk about that a little bit on next week's show, but that's this upcoming weekend. But on Friday, I took my son to a Washington Wizards game. He's a big fan of basketball. He likes the NBA. He likes all sports, but likes the NBA quite a bit. And he, in fourth grade, had to write a persuasive letter for his English class. And the persuasive letter was addressed to my wife and I. And the attempt to persuade was that he wanted to go to an NBA game and sit courtside. And it was a good letter. I mean, I don't know how you persuade someone to spend a substantial amount of money without a business plan, but it was a good job. He wrote a good letter, and I made a deal with him and said, if you have a good, finish the year strong, you have a great year of grades, then I will do that. I will figure out a way to make that happen somehow. And he did his end of the bargain. He had a great year, straight A's, and he had straight A's in the first quarter this year. Very proud of him. And I was going to take him to the Wizards game to play Charlotte. They have an in-season tournament this year, and it was going to be a Friday night. I was like, all right, well, maybe we'll just get some regular seats and just go watch some basketball, father and son. And I was looking at Ticketmaster, and I always look, I mean, any sporting event I go buy tickets for, I'm always looking to see if I can find like a mistake price or a super cheap, really good seat, and just for the experience of it. I mean, typically I go to like daytime baseball games by myself, just something to do, and every once in a while I'll upgrade to a really nice seat and get there early and drink some beers and eat chicken strips and all that stuff, try to get my money out of it. And I saw a couple of floor seats four rows back of the basket and near the Wizards bench, and it said they were $250 a seat, which is a lot of money. But compared to the seats right next to them that were available for like $500 a piece and $1,500 a piece, I knew it was probably a pretty good steal. Look, the Wizards aren't great at basketball, and the Charlotte Hornets aren't either. And I figured this was my best opportunity to get a seat like this at this price before they went and played really good teams, which then the interest comes up to watch those teams, the prices go up. So I did it. I went and paid for it, and I surprised them and said, hey, we're going to the game. It was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing, and we wound up going, and he had such a wonderful time. It was real. I mean, we had talked about, said, I'm going to try to do this. I didn't tell him when or how. And would you be okay with not exactly courtside, because those are $3,000 seats sometimes. I'm just not paying that for anything. And he, especially a 2-hour experience. And he's like, no, it doesn't have to be. Doesn't have to be. A very reasonable kid, which is great. And I mean, I know it's my money, but I didn't want to disappoint him. And we got there, and he fist bumped and gave a hug to the Wizards mascot, and because he's a lot like me, I see a lot of the world. I can understand how he sees the world a little bit, I think. And there are ways he's dislike me, but or unlike me. But he just carried, and he asked me if he could go say hi to LaMelo Ball. I mean, he didn't know. I was like, I don't think that's how this works. He loved that you could get, you know, the food and beverage was included in the ticket. And it wasn't special food. I mean, it wasn't like we were sitting there in the VIP, whatever the heck section, like eating caviar or whatever. Like, I was drinking lagers and Mick Ultras and stuff like that. But we had so much fun. And I was happy that I did it. Because, one, now I don't have to do it again if I don't want. And, two, it was really cool to... That's been one of my favorite things about being a parent is getting to experience new things because my kids' interest in them, but for them to get to experience things that they want. And I remember two experiences come to mind. So my father got me with my godfather tickets to the 1993 All-Star Game at Camden Yards. And it remains one of the coolest experiences ever. That was the game where John Kruk like could barely keep his helmet on in the box when he was facing Randy Johnson. And that was an incredible experience. I loved everything about that night. And then I think it was probably like 3 years later. I don't remember exactly when, but it was the old stadium before what is now Capital One Arena. It was in Landover, Maryland, U.S. Airways Arena, I believe, at the time. And my uncle, well, really, it was probably my aunt, got us seats through her company that were about where we were, my son and I, for this game, where we were behind the basket, but a little bit more toward the sideline than my son and I were, to see Jordan and the Bulls play George Mirason and then the Bullets. And it was an incredible experience. I was telling him about it, and I thought about it, and shout out to my Uncle Russell, one of the guys who got me into golf, and so one of the coolest people ever, and that was such a great experience. So it's been cool to be able to pass that kind of stuff on and try to make those opportunities possible for my kids. And so through that lens, I saw Camilo Villegas' win this past weekend at the Butterfield Bermuda Championship on the PGA Tour. He hadn't won since the 2014 Wyndham Championship, which is his fourth PGA Tour win. So more than 9 years, almost 9 years and 2 months had gone by since he had last won. And what part of the story is naturally a professional story. It's about a professional golfer who lost their way and really lost their way and found their way back to the winner's circle. And now he's 41. I didn't even realize he was older than me. Now he's 41. And the other part of it is the intensely personal story, family story. And Camilo and his wife, Maria, they have a son. They lost their daughter, Mia, to pediatric cancer on July 26, 2020. And at the time when Camilo talked about it publicly for the first time, he was playing on the Corn Ferry Tour, trying to kind of get his way back toward better status on the PGA Tour, because past champion status and, you know, 126 to 200, those types of statuses can get you into 126 to 150 and 151 to 200, can get you into some events. So he wasn't just not playing the tour. But he talked about it very openly, vividly, got very emotional about it, and it happened extremely quickly. I mean, I feel like when he talked about it it wasn't long, let's put it that way, but basically around when they figured it all out around when COVID started, just before when COVID started, and then just a few short months later, she passed away at 22 months old, which, I mean, that makes me choke up. I can't imagine what Camilo and Maria think about and feel every day and think about their daughter. And it was, you kind of, if you know the backstory, you kind of know what that moment's got to feel like. You can imagine what that moment feels like when, after having been through so much of that pain, something really good happens. And in his case, wins on the PGA Tour for a fifth time. guarantees himself status for the next 2 years, and he has an incredible opportunity to get to basically the PGA Tour champions, where he can go make money for a long time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Camillo tried his hand at commentary, and he did it with Golf Channel. I thought he did a pretty good job, actually, but now he doesn't have to really think about that for a couple more years, or maybe ever, because he's won again on the PGA Tour. And the putt went in, the winning putt went in, and if you saw it, you kind of imagine it too, but if you didn't see it, the winning putt goes in, and he pumps, does the quiet fist pump, and it was a foot and a half putt. He could have four putted in one, made an easy two putt, and pumps his fist, looks up to the sky, and pauses there, and hugs around, and just very appreciative moment. And then he gets the interview with NBC Sports and PGA Tour Radio, and I was most impressed by his perspective about it all. Yeah, the questions were obviously asked to get him to be emotional and to open up, and I'm sure he knew that. And I'm sure he was extremely emotional, but didn't break down, didn't cry, which would have been totally fine had he done that. The perspective that he had to say, my daughter is watching us, is smiling down, and he said that, and I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but what he said really stuck with me, that she's where she needs to be after a hard fight, after a long fight, and that he's really appreciative of the support of everyone that backed him last week when he had a close call, when Erik van Rooyen won at the Worldwide Technology Championship, and just over the years, and that meant a lot to him. And to have the quote that I wrote down, or got from the transcript, that means the most to me, is I think part of why I love golf so much, and part of why it just bothers me to no end, of course, because golf is life, golf is a lot like life. It's a great allegory for life. And Camillo put it well. He said, quote, this game has given me so many great things, but in the process, it kicks your butt. Life has given me so many great things, and in the process, it kicks my butt too, end quote. And that's it. That's it. And life and what's great about it, the great things are relative for different people and different walks of life, right? What's great to you and what's great to me are different. It's all relative. For certain people, you're extremely fortunate and the great things are incredibly great or more bountiful, more plentiful, or happen more frequently. And for other people and lots more people, unfortunately, those great things are relative and few, and the butt kicking stuff happens more frequently, too frequently. And that's all relative comment. But golf is like that. And again, it's all relative, right? Incredibly fortunate to be able to be in a position to play a recreational game for fun, where you can have multiple hours of your day, between 2 to 5 hours of your day, especially your weekends, to just go and play a recreational game. But the allegory of the sport is you learn so much about yourself and how you handle life, because it gets thrown at you in the form of golf the entire time, and it never stops. Even when you think you've got it figured out or you're getting better, something else comes up, or something happens suddenly, like a shank, and you don't expect it. And those are no way an apt comparison to the ups and downs of life and the biggest highs and sorrow that you feel, perhaps, but the velocity with which it happens and the unexpectedness with which it happens is a great allegory. And how you deal with that and how you think about it. And Camillo, I believe, has on both of his wrists, has the words attitude and energy tattooed there. And he just seemed to have, it's not an acceptance. Acceptance isn't, I don't think you ever truly accept the worst outcomes that happen in your life. You try to deal with them, you try to live with them and try to move on from them or acknowledge them or become more comfortable with them or what have you. There's a great quote from Stephen Colbert from many years ago. Several of his family members were killed in a horrible car accident. And he was talking about it. And he talks about it every once in a while. And he said he learned to love the worst thing that ever happened to him. And I feel like Camilo is on that, not exactly that same wavelength, not quite loving it, right? I mean, that's not, and Colbert wasn't saying he loved it because of what happened. He said he learned to love it because it made him grateful for what he had and what has come because of that. And the things and people that he has now in a, you know, a really deep moment. And I feel like Camilo has it right the same way. And I don't know how he kept it together. I don't know how he didn't just fall apart. But maybe he's fallen apart so many times over the last 3+ years that moment deserved to be happy. And for him to be able to acknowledge the horrible trauma and the death of his daughter and what that's meant for him personally, his family, but then at the same time to be able to have that moment after the interviews to embrace the win, to embrace a fleeting moment of happiness and to get sprayed with champagne and to just feel good for 5 seconds, like really good for 5 seconds. And I thought that was pretty cool. And I know not everyone thinks about sports that way. Oh, that's really nice. Change of channel. But that's how I feel like I experience life. I experience sports, lots of different things. I try to think about it from an empathetic perspective of what is someone feeling and going through when they perform at their best or they have their lowest moment or they come back from something. Because that, again, that's life. It's how you, I told the kids I coach soccer-wise, we played a game where we played, it felt like a semi-pro team of kids. I mean, they were way better than we were. They had more resources, more practice time, double the number of kids. I mean, they were a tremendously well-coached, good team. And they beat us like 12-0. And they could have made it worse. And our kids were tired. They had just had like basketball tryouts that wasn't well timed. And we're just not the same program. And I said to them after the game, and they took it really well. I mean, they took it incredibly well. And I said to them, the life, you're going to get your ass kicked a lot of times in life. And it's not the ass kicking that matters. It's what you do after that. Do you dust yourself off? Do you get up? Do you try to get better? Do you try to realize what went wrong and fix it? Do you try to make peace with it? You know, if it's something tragic, but it's what you do next. And so that to me is all the more impressive with what Camilo managed to pull off here. And hopefully for him, this isn't just one fleeting moment in time, but if it is, it was a great one. So I really enjoyed watching that, and I didn't really watch any of the golf otherwise on the PGA Tour, but once it became clear he was going to win, I wanted to see that. I want to see people succeed. I want to see people overcome something, not just have it handed to them. I mean, greatness is incredible to watch. I really enjoy watching people who are at the pinnacle of their craft be excellent at it. But there's something special to me about overcoming something, deficiency, tragedy, whatever it was, a low moment, a personal failure, whatever it is, to be great again for a moment. Because I think most of us are in that boat. That's where most of us are not the best in the world at something. You might be really incredible at something. You might be great at your job. You might be a great parent, whatever it is. But we, most of us live in that zone. And so I really like those kinds of moments, and they keep me connected to sports, and in a way I probably most people don't think about it, but I wanted to talk about it with you because I thought it was pretty special, especially in the context of getting to kind of see my children grow. And I'm talking about my son here, but also my daughter. She's really gotten into dance, and she's just blossomed into this wonderful, energetic, intelligent, funny, witty person. And that I do not take lightly. That I do not take for granted, that's the happiest part of my life. All right, we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be back right after this. If you're like me, you've wanted to buy gold for years. Lots of commercials out there, but who can you really trust? I don't want a bad investment, but didn't want to miss the boat either. Sound familiar? Fortunately, I've got great news. If you have an IRA or 401k and want to buy physical gold, eliminate fear and uncertainty from the process using the new Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist. It helps you evaluate and choose the best gold IRA company. I used it personally to vet Augusta Precious Metals, and they are absolutely phenomenal. Use this checklist to choose the best gold IRA company. Text to get your free Gold IRA Company Integrity Checklist today. Text GOLF to 68592. Again, text GOLF to 68592. That's GOLF to 68592. Or go to AugustaPreciousMetals.com. Welcome back to the show. Good to have you here this week. I'm Ryan Balaji. Thanks for being with us on the 19th Hole Golf Show. We'll have a couple more weeks of the show for this year. Now, this is the last week for the three major remaining tours that are in action. The PGA Tour ends their official events with the RSM Classic this week, so that'll determine the top 125 in the FedEx Cup Final. The people get their full cards for next year. Also, the top 10 players in the FedEx Cup Final ranking, those players get into the first two domestic mainland U.S., more specifically mainland U.S., signature events for next year, so they get into Riviera and Pebble Beach. So that's an important thing for some players coming down the stretch. On the LPGA Tour, they have the CME Group Tour Championship. So the top 60 players in their points list qualify for it, and then the points get erased for this week. And the player who wins the tournament gets the race to the CME Globe, gets the CME Globe title, and they get $2 million, which is a freaking lot of money, and it's the biggest purse in women's professional golf in terms of first place prize money. Which, so that's a big week ahead. Top 100 in the points list keep their cards from last week, so there was some drama in that. And then on the DP World Tour, we have the DP World Tour Championship in Dubai. Top 50 eligible and available players are competing in Dubai in a $10 million purse. And the race to Dubai has already been decided. So Rory McIlroy has already won a fifth race to Dubai because of the results of the Nedbank Golf Challenge, which Max Homa won. The results made it impossible for anyone to catch him in the points. So he's already won. He is playing. Unlike Steve Stricker, who won the Charles Schwab Cup on the PGA Tour Champions without playing in a single of the three playoff events. He had already locked it up after the first tournament because no one could catch him. So he didn't have to play any of the playoff events, and he won $1 million for the season-long race. He won, six times this year. So I guess he felt the need to kind of open up some space for people, but that's done and dusted. So after this week, the LPGA will be done until January. They will they'll have players competing in male-female pairs for the Grant Thornton Invitational, which is what used to be the Shark Shootout. That is no longer the Shark Shootout. And the PGA Tour will have the Hero World Challenge in the beginning of December. That's an unofficial event, but 20 players would be a good, great field, actually. And then the champions will have the PNC Championship, which used to be the father-son, now is kind of the family event, so to speak. We haven't heard for sure that Tiger and Charlie Woods are going to play, but I think most people anticipate that's going to happen. We don't know that for certain. There's also some anticipation that Tiger's going to play the hero. I don't know about that either, but I guess we'll see about all of that. And then on the DP World Tour, yes, the season ends this week, but they still do a wraparound because they are the most global tour, and they have events that are co-sanctioned with the PGA Tour of Australasia, which is now the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia, and they also have events co-sanctioned with the Sunshine Tour throughout the next couple of, basically the next month, and that's how they start their season on the DP World Tour. So they'll have events, but that'll be a new season. So one of my favorite times of the year in terms of golf you get to see, because you'll get to watch the Australian Open and the Aussie PGA. You don't really get to see a whole lot of Australian golf in the United States otherwise. Working on changing that. That's all I'll say about that. But I really like watching golf in Australia. It's different. Any opportunity I get to watch golf in Australia, I'm probably going to say yes to. So I hope to watch a little bit of that late nights in the next couple of weeks. So that's really the end of the year. I mean, we're basically at the end of it all. And I think I want to talk a little bit about the fall as a PGA Tour concept and how it might feed into the DP World Tour's fall next year and what my kind of takeaways from it all are, and just think about it in the perspective of as a fan, but also from the perspective of a guy who runs a golf media company. I really have wrestled with the idea of what the fall is and what it means. And part of that is tainted because in 2020 and 2021, the fall was still huge for golf. I mean, enormous for golf, because golf was one of the first sports back in 2020, and it picked up a nice little inflated following for about 16, 18 months, because it was one of the few sports on consistently, and golf figured out how to do it outdoors and did it very well, I thought. And so the audience numbers, whether that's website, whether that's TV, whatever, for 2020 and 2021 in the fall were huge. I mean, way better than they used to be. And then in 2022, life was a lot more like normal, and maybe is entirely normal at that point. It all kind of blurs together, to be honest. But it then also started the conversation about LIV, and LIV started in 2022, and there's more money and more infighting and lots of drama, and the PGA Tour changed their schedule and telegraphed that the fall wasn't really going to mean anything, even though that was the last wraparound season, and people just tuned it out en masse. The ratings were down 30-40% for most tournaments from the prior year, maybe more akin to the way they were before the COVID pandemic happened, but down across the board. And I kind of anticipated similar engagement this year, similar ratings. It turns out that was not right at all. The ratings were even worse, probably down 25-30% from last year, not across the board. So for example, the ratings for the West Coast events were not as horrible. The ratings for the Worldwide Technology Championship were actually a little bit better because it was in prime time as opposed to a little bit earlier in the day. The Sahith Theegala winning the Fortinet was up a little, pretty substantially over last year. But then the other events were way down. Like the Vegas event was down 50%. The Sanderson Farms was down 40-some%. The Zozo was down 30-40%. So I don't know the ratings for the Bermuda event. But generally speaking, down on down. But that is from a what are you expecting perspective from viewership. In terms of the quality of golf and what the product meant, I quite enjoyed it. I liked that there were anywhere from 3 to 5 to 6 top 50 players that were in the world ranking, not the FedEx top 50, that were competing. You got some chalk winners. I mean, Sahith Theegala had not won, but was one of the best players in the field at the Fortinet, other than maybe Justin Thomas and Max Homa. So a really good player won. And you had Ludovic Aubert get close in the Sanderson Farms, got a five-way playoff. That was entertaining. Colin Morikawa won in a runaway in Japan. Before that, you had Lexi, who was very entertaining for two rounds in Vegas. And you got Tom Kim to repeat as champion, something fairly historic given his age. And then you had Eric Van Rooyen's story, which was incredible. And a really interesting finish between him and Camillo and Matt Kuchar. And then, obviously, Bermuda was emotional. Not particularly close, but emotional. And interesting for that reason. So you had a really, really good mix. You had guys you absolutely would have expected to win, and guys you probably didn't expect as much. I mean, Camillo certainly, Eric Van Rooyen was heading in the right direction, but probably didn't expect it. Luke List wound up winning the Sanderson Farms. Probably didn't expect that because he had only won once before that, but now is a two-time PGA Tour winner. And then you've got this week with the RSM, probably the best field of fall. I mean, other than the Zozo. You got, what, like 12 of the world top 50 competing this week. I don't know the exact Zozo field in front of me, but pretty similar. And that's a nice way to finish it off with a tournament that has two courses, is pretty conveniently located for a lot of players who live in the Southeast, and gives them a chance for the Sea Island Mafia to show off and Davis Love hosts. And it's a nice week. It's a tournament I'd like to cover once. And I think that's a proper cap. And at the end of that, you know, 125 players, or the players who finished 51 to 125 in the FedEx Cup fall list, which is really 1 through 75 in the FedEx Cup fall list, they get their total cards. The top 10 get into the first two mainland U.S. signature events. That's a cool thing. I think that's nice. We're still going to have Q School, which I'm excited about, and it's going to be on TV, which is cool. That drama has been missing for far too long with the meaning of PGA Tour cards for the top five and ties, but also with Korn Ferry Tour guaranteed starts on the line, that's a life-changing event for a lot of people. It's happening right now, the DP World Tour. They're in the middle of their final stage of Q School too, so there's a lot on the line there. And I do, as I mentioned earlier, I like the stories of the players who have gone through hard times or are trying to figure it out or had something and lost it and are getting it back or figuring it out for the first time. I love those types of things. So I like this stuff. Does it stink that people now have deemed this to not really matter because it doesn't count toward the FedEx Cup season proper? Yeah. And maybe the messaging will make it better over time, and maybe they'll massage it to make it more interesting. I don't know. But I like the definition of the fall. I like the way that it is perceived now, as opposed to just kind of, all right, well, you know, this is the head start for the people who graduated from the Korn Ferry Tour and the players who kept their card but just barely, or don't have their card and want to get it, you know, ahead on status before the reshuffles and stuff like that. So I like this definition a little bit better. I do appreciate it more. I think it does also seem to have a spillover effect for the positive for the DP World Tour. They have changed their schedule over the last couple of years, and they're going to even change it more for next year to accentuate the fall, accentuate September, October, and November, because for them, it means having the BMW PGA, having the French Open, having these two, or having this playoff event, because the Nedbank won't be a playoff event next year, but having a playoff. All of that stuff will happen in the fall for them. It's their time to shine. And from Billy Horschel or Max Homa, Justin Thomas, McIlroy, Rahm, Hovland, Aubert is probably going to be part of this, Hatton, Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood in the Alfred Dunhill links, they're going to have some pretty decent fields, if not some above average fields in the main, in the fall. And that's an opportunity for that tour to shine and thrive. And whatever happens with this framework agreement and the Saudis and each other, almost certainly the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour will come to a formal agreement where the DP World Tour is owned by the PGA Tour. That's almost certainly coming along. And so whatever happens from here moving forward, hopefully they can play off of each other a little bit. And yes, the ratings will not be combined as high as single regular PGA Tour event that airs on U.S. broadcast TV on the weekend, but at least you can combine it to make some interesting things for the fall. So hopefully that continues. I like that. I appreciate it. I'm not thrilled about the website numbers and things like that because interest in golf just takes a nosedive after the PGA Tour season ends. However, from a presentation, meaning carrot and stick, all those types of things, I'm cool with that. So that's I think it's been good. Do we need all these golf tournaments? That depends on who you ask, right? For the players who are trying to secure their card, yeah, it's vital. It gives them a chance to, a last chance saloon type of thing to save their status or regain it or do better. And that's certainly worth noting. From a fan's perspective, 90 to 95% of people who watch PGA Tour golf on the weekends did not watch this stuff. So for them, they couldn't have cared less. Doesn't matter to them. They don't need it. It's got to be somewhere in between. I don't know if there's a way to make the fall better while also maintaining this new structure. They wanted to have a situation where the fall tournaments didn't feel like they were just also-rans. So they created this. Will it change substantially in the next few years? I don't know. I think there's still a lot of change that's going to happen that we don't even know about yet. And maybe even the people who author that change don't even know about yet. So, yes, positive in the whole. I think things will change. Things will get better. Probably sometimes will get worse. But to have the good stories that we did throughout the fall and a variety of good stories, I think was a net positive. So we'll take it and we'll run with it. We'll go ahead and take a break. We'll come back right after this. All right, last segment this week, and I appreciate you being here with us. We don't have a guest this week. We probably will have one for next week. We'll talk about that for next week's show, but no guest this week. So I'm going to spend a couple of minutes sort of griping, but with a point, and it won't just be for a personal purpose. Well, it'll be somewhat, but there will be a broader point than, oh, woe is me. So, a few weeks ago, I don't remember when it was. I think it was beginning of November. It doesn't really matter anymore. But sitting around in my house, doing some cleaning, and I went upstairs to my bathroom and started cleaning out my medicine cabinet. Hardly ever touch it, except to get my deodorant out and maybe occasionally grab, like, an Advil. And I was looking through my stuff. I was like, hey, I've got some colognes up here. Like, I have a cologne from when I got married from 13 years ago, more than 13 years ago now, 13 and a half years ago. And my wife gave it to me for that particular day. And I hardly ever worn it since. And I'm just not a cologne guy. And she knew that, but she wanted to have like a scent for that day. I'm like, that's totally cool. Put it on that day. I hadn't touched it since. So I was like, all right, well, maybe I'll use this. I'll see if she can remember the scent that she got for me from 13 years ago. And while I was looking through it, I saw a bottle of another cologne, PGA Tour cologne. And I was like, oh, I totally forgot that I had this. I got this from like some PR firm when it came out, like I said, at least 10 years ago, I think. And they had sent it to me. I probably shared a couple pictures of it on like Twitter or Facebook and never did anything with it. Cause what am I supposed to do about cologne? I write about golf. I don't even know if I asked for it, to be honest with you. And it's just sitting in there because it's a full bottle of cologne. Like, what am I supposed to do with that? And just left it in there for 10 years. And I pulled it out. I was like, yeah, I forgot about this. Let's see if some people can think of some funny things to say. Took a picture of it and tweeted some of the captions like, what do you think this smells like? And to my shock, genuine shock, got hundreds of replies, lots of them funny. Lots of mentions of Lucas Glover, swamp ass, Saudi money, tears, grass. I mean, there were all kinds of creative responses and it was very nice, totally unexpected, but it made for a nice couple of chuckles on a Saturday or Sunday, whenever I said it. So this week, I was putting my daughter to bed on the 9th. So was that Thursday? I don't remember. But got a text message from a buddy in the industry. And it was a link to a tweet. I click on it. And it's from Digest, Golf Digest. And they had tweeted my tweet. So they took a picture. They downloaded the picture of that I had sent as the attachment to the tweet. Screenshotted my tweet. Laid that over the picture. Made one picture of those things. And then shared the tweet was wrong answers only. And the emoji of like finger pointing down. You answer below. They didn't tag me. They technically credited me, I suppose, by putting my face and screen name on it. And, people were answering. Of course, no one tagged me. No one responded and tagged me. No one followed me as a result of it. A couple hundred thousand people saw it because Digest is huge. I mean, they've got tons of reach, right? They're tremendously large. They have Discovery. Warner Brothers is their financial resource, sugar daddy, if you will. And they've got a lot of power behind them. And then I was like, well, if they did it on Twitter/X, I'll bet they did it on Instagram. And sure enough, they did. Same thing, same caption, same picture, no tags. And I was not happy about it. Because, yes, Golf Newsnet is a larger golf media outlet, but I'm still small. And yeah, we're growing, but I definitely don't have their resources. And I put them on blast, just retweeted it, said, this is great that I'm getting Zyre golfed by a prestigious golf media outlet. Because, and I don't know if you know, and it probably is better if you don't, but there's a Instagram account called Zyre Golf, Z-I-R-E. And they have amassed an enormous following on Instagram, basically by just downloading people's content, posting it as their own, never giving anyone credit, and building follows off of it. And I'm sure that there are some people like, oh, I'd love for Zyre Golf to show my stuff and send it to them, and they probably share some of that too. But generally speaking, they just post stuff that they think is funny or interesting or engaging and download it and off of someone else's accounts and share it as their own. They don't really do much original stuff. And I don't even know what Zyre Golf does other than take other people's stuff and put it on Instagram. To the point that they have done it with one of my tweets from like 3 or 4 years ago, and they repost it frequently about, again, another dumb tweet. I commented, I prefer to play with worse golfers, higher handicap golfers. They seem to have more fun than lower handicap golfers who tend to take golf too seriously. I would much rather do that and just have a good time than play against a 6 or 7 handicap or whatever who takes too seriously. And that account has posted that thing repeatedly. Like they do it like every few months to gain attention. They never tag me, ever. I only find out because of people who know me and see it. They go, hey, you're on Zyre Golf. I go, oh, great. They stole my content again. That's annoying. And very occasionally do I get someone who in those responses responds to me and tags me because they want me to see their response. And then we talk and it's nice and it's lovely. But that this happens on Instagram. It happens on Twitter. And so I got upset about it and wound up having a private conversation with some of the folks from Digest about it. And ultimately, my request was, look, I understand this is your choice to do this. I can't stop you from doing this. I wouldn't do this. I think this is frankly terrible. And you have incredible content and resources. Why do you need my stupid tweet about cologne? But they agreed that they would, after the fact, tag me. Now, of course, it was far too late once that happened. And they knew that. And they knew that posting my content with just an image of what I posted and no tagging would mean nothing. Because they go, oh, well, we credited you, but no one's going to follow you because of that. Because we all know you don't just Oh, go, or at least I do sometimes, but most people, 99% of people do not do this. They do not go follow someone after they see a picture of theirs ripped off the internet. It just doesn't happen. And they know it, and I know it, which is why people do it, because it increases their clout without totally being in the, without 100% being in the wrong, and that makes them, you know, that increases their clout. They get more followers. People go, oh, I saw that funny thing there. I'm going to follow that account instead of the one that produced it. This happens across every social media medium, not just me, not just golf. I don't feel like I'm targeted here or anything like that. There was a very interesting controversy. It's still ongoing on YouTube. There's a YouTuber called Sniper Wolf, and she basically just downloads people's TikToks, posts them as videos, and quote unquote reacts to them in horrible, annoying ways. But people watch her videos by the millions because she aggregates, without asking for permission, the TikToks that are very popular. So people follow her and watch her stuff and put up with her horrible commentary because she goes and does that. Now, that she makes millions of dollars off of that and has made millions of dollars off of that. That is way worse than Digest's tweet thing. And again, I don't feel like I'm targeted here. This happens to other people. It happens to people way more famous than I could ever be. And I'm not worried about something being a personal vendetta. But this is an extension of things that have happened over the course of my life in media. Over the years, my work has been copied or has been used without my permission or used inappropriately. So I've, you know, had the good fortune to break some stories over the years, and I've done some cool stuff over the years. And more often than you would think, my stuff gets aggregated without a link back or even a full-throated mention of where it came from, different things that I've reported. And that's not just from blogs. That's from mainstream outlets that will maybe reference who reported it but not link back to it. And they'll go, oh, well, over the years, they go, oh, well, that's just kind of how it is. No, it's not how it has to be. This is the internet in 2020, whatever year, 20 whatever. And you can link back. It's okay. You don't have to worry about it. Most people won't click through. The point is the credit. The point is saying where you got something and giving proper credit for it. And I've been on the other end of that, where, especially really early on, like 20 years ago when I started blogging, I wouldn't link back directly like the first couple of times. And people get mad, legitimately mad. I was like, yeah, you're right. I should link to you. If I'm going to use any portion of your content as a jumping off point for commentary or analysis, I should credit you. And I've always done that. And I've done it since. And always done it. And if I fail to do it, I correct it. If it's a tweet, I delete it. If it's an article, I update and republish it. Those types of things. I'm not saying I'm perfect. But that's my goal, is to give people credit for their work. I mean, I've kind of gone out of my way the last years, to be honest with you, in doing content for the website, articles. I don't do aggregated blog stuff anymore. There's plenty of places to find it, and I don't care enough about it to just have another SEO headline, a search engine headline, that people will click through. You won't believe, or PGA Tour Pro says, you know, all that stuff, it sucks, it's crappy content, it's crappy for you, it's crappy for me to write it. I don't really care about if you come to the website that much. It doesn't build loyalty from an audience perspective. It's just junk. So if someone else writes something that's interesting, I'll tweet it out, or I'll put a link to it in a newsletter or an update, and you can go find it yourself. I don't need to regurgitate what someone has done. I can use it as talking off points, or jumping off points for stuff we talk on this show. And I try to go out of my way to tell you where it came from, and if I can remember, if it's that important. and where to go with it from there. But to just write a blog about it because six other golf media outlets are writing about it at the same time, that's a waste of my time and yours. So I don't do that. And that is why, this is a little ethos about me, that's one of the reasons why I have pursued GNN Radio and GNN TV. Because it is a lot harder to copy those things than text and pictures. Will it happen? I guess in some sort of small ways. But it's hard to start those types of things. They require investment. They require a lot of time. The video content is not easy to replicate. It's long form. So all of those things that it's hard to copy and cheat out. So that's one of the reasons why I've thought about that. But I wanted to talk about that in the context of you, the golf consumer, you, the golf media consumer, because you're spending time listening to this show, and you probably are a pretty substantial golf fan, right? I mean, no offense to me, but if you're listening to my podcast, you're probably really big into golf. So as a consumer of media, I think you should know kind of some of that stuff that happens. And I'm sure you've noticed some of it too, where it doesn't happen just golf, but people's content gets downloaded and stolen. And some things are, memes are one thing. Like I can live with that. Like a screen capture of something that everyone turns into a meme. I can live with that. I'm okay with that. I think we've kind of accepted that that's okay. But the idea of just downloading stuff and that's not yours, it's not fair game. And I mean fair game like screen captures or provided highlights. The PGA Tour provides highlights sometimes. The LPGA, DP World Tour, those things are provided. They want them to be shared and spread out. And they don't require credit because everyone knows where it came from. Right? You know a PGA Tour event when you see one. You know an LPGA event when you see one. You know a DP World Tour event when you see one. They've got the logoing. But you don't know me. You don't know some random person who's trying to build a following. Maybe they're trying to be an influencer on Instagram or whatever. But there are tons of accounts that are dedicated to getting the rub from someone else's work. And all I would ask is if you can consume what you want to consume. But I would strongly urge you to take that next step and go a little bit deeper if you ever encounter those types of accounts, and just throw a follow to some of those people that if they make content that you like and they got aggregated, go find them and follow them. They're trying to do something cool that matters to them, whether that means they want it as a business or just something that's fun for them. But if they're doing something you enjoy, you laugh at, you think about, that got ripped off from somewhere else, all I would say is go try to seek them out and follow them. And there's plenty of great content out there. There's also lots of horrible, terrible, annoying content out there. And you can like that too. Our opinions can differ. But if something speaks to you, go find that person and follow them. It'll make their day. It truly will. All right, that's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for being here with us. We'll be back next week with another show. We'll go over the last three events of the year on the major tours. Get ourselves ready for a little unwind. We'll probably talk a little bit about Black Friday type stuff. We have the deals that are currently out there, the best ones that I've seen over at golfnewsnet.com. You can seek them out and check those things out when you have a chance. And I'll post a link to that as well in the show description for this week. And we're updating that throughout the course of this week and Cyber Week and whatever all that stuff is. We'll get it all out there as best we can. We'll be back next week. Thanks so much for your support. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.